All right, all you movie junkies, it is time for the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. And welcome to the SLS Cast, episode 6.
Welcome.
Yes, welcome. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing all right. No complaints whatsoever. I have a nice bottle of Francis Ford Coppola Rosso keeping me company here while discussing film and filmly things with you, Matthew.
Excellent, Timothy.
Indeed.
Yes, I happen to have a Rudy's Country Store and Barbecue cup filled with water because it turns out I don't do so well drunk speak. So
we don't do so well drunk speak and tired speak like we figured out last week.
Yeah, that was definitely something else. Must say, definitely something else there. But live and learn.
Exactly.
We'll probably do one of those every once in a while just because it's crazy. Strictly speaking, we have started 45 minutes earlier than last week. So this might not be as good as we hope either. But we're going to find out. We're just going to plow on. We're going to press on, carry through, have a lot of fun with it. So I guess, shall we just jump right in then, get to our movie news?
Yeah, let's do this. Go for it.
All right. Well, no, I took over because you made me watch a terrible trailer. This time you made me watch a weird one, but not unacceptable, followed by a couple of good ones. So we will let you regain your firstness.
My firstness. Okay, well, why don't we start it off with, speaking of trailers, a Sean Penn trailer. What I showed Matt was the French trailer for his upcoming film called This Must Be a Place, or excuse me, This Must Be the Place, where he plays a, okay, so folks listening to this might get a laugh out of it, and they might think it's a comedy, but it is not. It's about an aging, used-to-be rocker who is on his, like, on this self-fulfilling journey to find the Nazi who I guess killed his father, or who tortured his father in Auschwitz back during World War II.
May I offer some insight?
Yes, please do.
Okay, as always, we will have the links on the website, so please go there for further clarification. I am simply reading the official synopsis from the actual webpage. And it says, Cheyenne, a wealthy former rock star, played by Penn, now bored and jaded in his retirement, embarks on a quest to find his father's persecutor, an ex-Nazi war criminal now hiding out in the U.S. Learning his father is close to death, he travels to New York in the hope of being reconciled with him during his final hours, only to arrive too late. Having been estranged for over 30 years, it is only now in death that he learns the true extent of his father's humiliation in Auschwitz at the hands of a former SS officer, Alois Mueller, an event he is determined to avenge. And in my best movie guy voice, so begins a life-altering journey across the heartland of America to track down and confront his father's nemesis.
Yeah, and, you know, I have faith in Sean Penn, especially after seeing the movie Tree of Life, which, you know, I guess I'll mention something about it later on. I think he's a very good, a very fine actor, and his performances are entertaining, and the movie choices he makes are very entertaining. But, you know, I kind of was getting into the trailer up until, you know, like they did the whole dramatic thing where, you know, especially how he speaks, he's kind of doing the I am Sam voice, like, oh, I've got to do this for my father, I have to do this for my father, and you don't really know what's going on until the trailer says Auschwitz, and you're like, oh, they have to pull the World War II stuff and the really overdramatic, you know, teleplay to help, you know, make the story dramatic, I guess. And that's the only iffy thing I have towards this movie, is if it's going to actually play to the character and the story, or it's just going to rely on the heavy drama brought to you by, you know, what happened in history so many years ago.
I don't know. I think that the synopsis that I read really kind of overplays the quirky drama aspect. That's the vibe I got from watching the trailer, is that it was supposed to be a quirky drama, almost an independent flick feel to it. And that's, yeah, so that's what I got.
Okay. Well, right. We will see how that one goes.
In Dieter Rooney. Next trailer that you thought was interesting.
The Thing. Not to be confused with John Carpenter. Well, actually, to be confused with John Carpenter's The Thing from the 1980s, starring the great Kurt Russell. It's actually the prequel to The Thing. And if most of you movie junkies out there who are familiar with great classic Carpenter horror, you'll remember at the beginning of it, they have the, I think they were German scientists, Dutch scientists, Europeans. They all kind of blend together over movie watching. They're up in a helicopter sniping down, trying to kill this dog. Well, it turns out that dog ends up being the alien and yada, 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 and the people up in the helicopter die. Well, The Thing, which is coming out in October, is about those scientists that were up in the helicopter, and they're the ones that actually discovered the alien. And the trailer fails to note that it's really a prequel, and especially the title is misleading because it's both, you know, both movies are called The Thing. But it is, in fact, the trailer. What did you find interesting about the trailer, Matt? Did you get the vibe of the original movie? Because that's what I got throughout it, like especially the set design and whatnot.
Well, I will say this, in the interest of full disclosure, it has been many, many moons since I have seen The Thing. And as I said before we started the show, I am going to have to go back and watch The Thing again. It seems to me that they are taking advantage of the idea of a prequel to kind of remake the first movie. That's the vibe that I'm getting. I think, though, it does look entertaining. It did not look cheesy. It did not look like they were taking too much license with it. I just think they're taking advantage of the idea of the prequel to pretty much run the gamut of the first movie again.
Yeah.
Because it has been... It was 1982, if I remember correctly. So it's been damn near 30 years. And I think that's what they're trying to do with it. So that is probably why it's not called The Thing, The Beginning, or what have you. It's just simply called The Thing again.
Yeah.
Not that the movie's called The Thing again. It's called The Thing, close quote, again.
Yeah. So, well, I'm looking forward to it. I think that's going to be a really cool, creepy Halloween film to come out, you know, in October.
Sure, sure.
So, all right, another trailer news. We have the new Sherlock Holmes Game of Shadows trailer with Robert Downey Jr., Jude Law, and also our favorite girl with the dragon tattoo, Noomi Pace.
Yay! However, I will say that I was very happy to have seen that when I watched Harry Potter. I was like, I think, weirdly, the only person, like, going, yeah, and kind of, you know, clapping a little bit when I realized what it was that I was watching. Nobody else in the theater seemed to get... I think maybe it was because of the whole bunch of twinks and tweens and idiot Harry Potter people. Wizard duel people watching it, and they were just waiting to cheer for Harry Potter and stuff. I don't know.
See, what sucked was that the screening I went to, there were no trailers. So I missed this trailer, and I also missed the Dark Knight trailer as well.
Your loss, sir. That teaser trailer was...
Well, I've seen it. I've seen
it's,
it.
It's a bit of a... It's a little more than a teaser, but not quite a... I don't know. An in-betweener teaser trailer?
an in-betweener teaser?
That's right. There
that
you
sounds
go.
That sounds a little too sexy to say on our an in-betweener teaser.
That's right.
All right.
That's what I'm going with. I'm going with it because it wasn't quite a full-fledged trailer, but it was not just a teaser either.
Yeah.
So,
you saw Bane and Gordon.
Yeah. So I have to say, and I was just so amazingly excited to see it. I was very happy. And the probably the biggest reason I was excited to see it, aside from it's going to be an amazing film, was that we reported it on the show the week, you know, the Tuesday. It hit on the Tuesday before the movie came out.
Oh, we did. That's right.
So
yes.
I love it when... And that's like the second time that we have reported something, and within days of it, of us talking about it on the show, it came to be. So I was just like, yes! Because the first one was MySpace.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I had said that MySpace was one of the brands that would be disappearing. We talked about it, and then like 6 days later, all of a sudden, MySpace sold for like $280 million or something. So, or $28 million. Some ungodly low-ass amount.
Why are we... you know, reviewing films when we should just open up a fortune-telling booth and create our fortune like that, Matt?
Dude, I'm wearing a Karnak costume right now. I don't know what you're talking about.
You're wearing a costume?
Yes, I wear a Karnak costume every time.
Really?
Yeah, before we go and start talking about a movie, I take a card. I don't know if you can hear that, but I take an envelope and I hold it up against my head. And then I do the movie review, and then I open it, and that's what the movie was. So there you go.
I just sit in my underwear with my windows open.
Yeah, well, you know, you're young and thin and good-looking and can do that. I'm old and tired and married. I can't do that anymore.
Oh. All right, moving on. okay, so Sherlock Holmes, The Thing. Another trailer we took a gander at. Okay, so Matt, did you see the movie Chicken Run that came out in 2000-ish?
Yes, I did. I won't say suckered, but I was definitely pulled in. I was convinced to see it based on the Wallace and Gromit hook, because I had seen Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty clever, and I liked it.
So you're familiar with the, kind of like the Though it's a children's movie, and all their films are kind of are children or family films.
Family, yes.
Yeah, but there's quite a bit of goofiness and silliness that is smart and witty. You know, I guess as much as a family film can be, but still be enjoyable for the adults.
Sure.
And this is what this film, The Pirates Band of Misfits. Which is the claymation stop motion movie made by these same Brits who made Wallace and Gromit and Chicken Run, and to me, after watching this trailer, I'm relieved and quite happy that there are still movies like this being made. Personally,
okay, sure, and having after watching the trailer, I gotta say that the movie looks very cute, looks very family-friendly, and unfortunately for me, it looks like all other movies like this style, which was similar vein, Flushed Away, for example, where they kind of, it looks like they just showed all the funny stuff in the trailer. And so I'm going to have to wait. Personally, I will be waiting, unless my daughter somehow convinces me to go see it in the theater with her. I will probably be waiting for DVD on this one. But if it's anything like Flushed Away, which we also did end up picking up on DVD, and I was like, really? And we popped it in, and I was very pleasantly surprised. And I have seen Flushed Away probably 372,212 times.
I haven't seen that yet. It's with Hugh Jackman, right?
Yes, they play the rats in the sewer world of London.
Ah.
And it's really it is supremely clever, especially considering it's got Sir Ian McKellen as well.
Wait! You shall not pass,
yes.
Sir Ian McKellen.
Yes, oh, okay. Yes, you shall not pass. Cut, Sir Ian. and it's also got Jean Renault.
Ah, yes.
And then, of course, Kate Winslet's in it. And then some other people, it really is quite cute. It's really quite clever. One of the parts that they give away in the trailer for the movie, it still makes me laugh every time. Because Finding Nemo is one of my favorite Pixar movies, and he's flushing down, and he's going, oh, I'm falling out. And all of a sudden, a fish lands in his hand, and it's like, it looks, I mean, it's a goldfish, but you get the idea. He goes, looks up, have you seen my dad? Just, ah! Yeah.
Well, I will have to check that out. Okay, I'm going to switch from doing trailers to doing something else. Maybe something sexy, and maybe something a little nasty, but possibly sexier.
Okay, this is an explicit show, not a porno show.
I know, but this picture for the film, it's the concept art for Nurse 3D. I mean, it's the woman to me is very attractive.
Yes. Good Lord, yes. And a quick disclaimer, it will be
nudity.
Posted yes. on the website, and it is the link itself is posted with NSFW. So be forewarned. Do not say for work.
Especially if you click on the poster and you can blow it up and then you can do what we did and zoom in.
I have no idea what you're talking about, sir. I have no idea.
And examine the picture. Okay, but yeah. I'm not one who is for the really artsy, like, oh, well, we're going to throw nudity just to get people's eye for the, you know, eye for advertising or for this or for that or just something very different. There's just something so sexy and grotesque about this picture that makes me want to go and actually check out this, or maybe not watch this movie, but look into this movie, I suppose. And that's what I'm getting from looking at this promotional
art. I'm not going to lie. I look at that promotional art, and all I can think of, probably because I'm a guy, is she going to look like that in the movie? That's all I can think of. You know, is she going to be conveniently covered in blood enough to look like a nurse's uniform in the movie? So like that is what my mind thinks. I'm a dirty old man. Did I mention I'm an old, fat, married guy? You know, this is how I think now. I'm sorry.
You're not old. You're what, like 60, 50, 55?
Yeah, see? You know, and 55 is the new 34, so.
Exactly. Exactly. That is Nurse 3D. Listeners, tell us what you think about that. Please, I would love to know.
Speaking of listeners letting us know things, we have gotten a few more comments, so, and I have taken it upon myself to email back the commenters. So thank you. Please keep those coming.
What were those comments? Out of curiosity.
It was pretty short and sweet. It was entertaining and informative kind of a thing. So, you know, I was glad to get it and sent the poster a reply. And again, you know, if it's something that's really specific that we can use on the show, I will definitely be reading it on the show.
Okay, so Dimension Films commissions two different scripts for the sequel to Bad Santa.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it was
I love that movie.
It was an entertaining film. I mean, Billy Bob Thornton plays the character. You know, he does what he do. You know, he does what he does best, and that's being an asshole. That piece of news wasn't that good, so I'm going to jump into a piece of news that would be even better. So, that would be the trailer for John Carter of Mars, which I think they even just shortened the title to a John Carter. It's going to be released by Disney. It is going to be rated PG-13. It's about a Civil War fighter named John Carter who gets transported somehow. I don't know if there's like a description of how he gets teleported or transported to Mars, where he encounters aliens and different races and a battle and whatnot. And the trailer for it just got released, What are your thoughts on the trailer? Very interesting, especially the Peter Gabriel song that they use.
I was very impressed with this trailer. And based on this trailer, I will see this movie. Now, you then scared me when you followed it up with, yeah, but I hope it's not like Prince of Persia. And I really hope that's true, because when I saw the trailer for Prince of Persia, I was like, wow, that movie's going to suck.
And it did.
And it did. But then again, I was a fan of the video game franchise that it was based off of. And I was like, wow. Blue-eyed, British accent-speaking American playing a basically an Arabic person for, you know, for all intents and purposes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's going to work. That's going to work really well. So, yeah, it looked terrible. And I was right. This one, on the other hand, really looks good.
All right, then, Superman news. The new Man of Steel script directed by Zack Snyder, who did 300 and Watchmen, and as of late, Sucker Punch and the what was it called? The Owls of Ga'Hoole, Guardians of Owls of Ga'Hoole. It's going to be under the scribe of the co-writer of 300. Now, Matt, if I remember correctly, aren't you a fan of 300?
Well, I'm a fan of Frank Miller.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, yeah, I dig Frank Miller, but I did not like 300. Did not like 300. So, the co-writer of 300 to be writing Man of Steel is a little worrisome, because I might actually enjoy Superman Begins, whatever the hell this last Superman movie was called, more so than this one, though directed by Snyder. So, we'll see, I guess.
Alrighty then.
The one trailer I've been really looking forward to for a while now is Martin Scorsese's Hugo, which is based off the popular books The Adventures of Hugo Cabret. And actually, the movie was originally titled The Adventures of Hugo Cabret. Then it was shortened to Hugo Cabret, and because of test audiences, they decided that Hugo would, I guess, attract a bigger box office, which to me is kind of bullshit, but whatever. The film is, to me, looks very enchanting and fun. Very crisp, clear, fluid look to it. The film has I believe it's a no-name kid in it. It stars Chloe Moretz, Jude Law, Ben Kingsley, Ray Winstone, Christopher Lee, and Sacha Baron Cohen. Which I guess for some of those names, at least, it really doesn't matter. Because the film can go either way. But, I don't know, just by looking at the trailer, it looks like a kind of a fun movie, better than Night at the Museum.
I didn't see the second one. I liked the first one, but I only watched it on DVD one time. So, take that for whatever you will. In terms of this trailer, Jude Law and Sacha Baron Cohen being in a movie like this make me cautious about this film. And Ben Kingsley was also in Prince of Persia, which sucked. So, and then you said Christopher Lee. Did you say Christopher Lee?
Yeah, Christopher Lee.
Yeah, he was Count Dooku. So, anybody with a name like that, that's so. Again, I let's just say I'm cautious. I'm reserving judgment for now. Perhaps maybe I'll read more about it or find a better trailer or something. So.
Yeah, that's usually the case.
So cool. And was that all of your news, sir? Or did you have any?
Thankfully, that is it.
Okay, well then, let me run through what I have. I've got several things, but they're very short. The first thing up was, since Potter's on everybody's brain right now, they actually have a photo gallery, courtesy of Yahoo Movies, that's has a list of the least successful Potter imitators. And they include movies like The Spiderwick Chronicles and Aragon and things like that. And it shows you their budget and their U.S. gross, which is pretty funny. So, but some of these looked bad from the get-go, like The Golden Compass. And I was like, wow, this movie looks terrible. And sure enough, it was bad. So, you know.
Oh, I love that movie. I love Golden Compass.
Take it from me. This list seems pretty sound. Further along, we have Charlie Sheen getting a new television show. His buddy Joe Roth, who, according to Sheen, is, quote, one of my favorite movie producers of all time, end quote. The show is called, and I'm not kidding, Anger Management. And
Wait. As in the Jack Nicholson and Adam Sandler film?
Yes, yes. And it is based on that movie.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
It is based on that movie, and it is called Anger Management, and I just think it's hilarious that Charlie Sheen's in a sitcom. And, even more to the point, he's playing the Jack Nicholson role. That's true. And, according to Lionsgate, who are, I guess, backing the project, it's a half-hour comedy show, and Charlie Sheen actually has an ownership stake in it. So he's happy because, you know, now he gets to be himself and think that it's okay.
Okay, early prediction. How do you think that show will turn out?
I'm pretty sure it will last one season, for sure, because people will just be trying to figure out what the hell's going on and will not make it past the second season.
Fair enough.
All right. In other entertainment news, Rebecca Black of Friday fame has come out with a new video called
Saturday.
yeah. Actually, if you want to, you know, because of everything that was mentioned, I would think that chronologically the next video would have been Monday, as she sings about Saturday and Sunday in that video. But this one is actually called My Moment, and I watched the whole thing, and I will say that I agree with the following quote. This is a tip of the hat to Tiffany Lee with Yahoo Music. She says, quote, an introspective but still slightly dancey tune, the now 14-year-old singer calls out all her haters and flaunts the opportunities that internet mass hatred has brought her. Backup dancers, limo rides, and movie premieres. The voice is still not great, heavily supported by autotune, but she's refined her look and brims with confidence. And that's not what the internet wants. With her online fame based on Friday being deliciously ripe for parody, My Moment just might cut what few moments she had left short. So,
boom!
Yeah.
Booyah! Wow.
And after watching this video, I couldn't help but agree that My Moment just might cut what few moments she had left short. So, check it out for yourself. Let us know what you think. I would say it's worth watching one time. It's not terrible. It's just a legitimately
bad music video.
Yes. No, it's just a legitimate. It's not bad. It's just a legitimately boring.
Well, hey, what's video. With that? Like that freaking. What's with that dance they break out into? Like, midway through the music video, they break out some kind of, like, slapping dance thing?
We're talking about someone who has trouble deciding whether or not to be in the front or the back seat, and you're asking about slap dancing in a video? Really?
I don't know, because maybe I'm so confused, you know, like, I mean, does Saturday really come after Friday?
I'm not sure. I'm starting to question whether or not Sunday is the day after that, or the 6 days before Saturday. That's, you know, that's my question. What do you think of that?
Because with Friday, she raised so many philosophical questions about the days of the week and the weekend itself that I hope the sequel to her success will bring and rain down the following amazingness that she has brought with her previous work.
So, moving along, because apparently people aren't dying right now. People are procreating. So, Ivanka Trump has a kid, and true to form, Donald Trump doesn't even let his daughter spread the word. He gets on Fox and Friends and tells everybody the baby's name, which is Arabella. Arabella Rose. Go-go names. All right. And Dennis Quaid has
Arabella?
That is the name, Arabella.
It sounds like a potpourri.
It sounds like a mushroom. Okay? We have the lovely Arabella mushroom pizza here for you. I don't know. So, yeah, Dennis Quaid, though, he joins the film version of That's Right, Ladies and Gentlemen, What to Expect, which is actually short for What to Expect When You're Expecting. Yes, they're making a movie out of the book, the best-selling book, been on the New York Times bestseller list for more than 500 weeks. About time that book got made into a movie, I guess. But I have no idea what they're going to do, because the book is not a story. It's literally just...
Yeah, what you expect.
Yeah, I got the version. Yeah, I've gotten two different versions of these books, one with each marriage. And it's just tips and tricks on what happens during pregnancy and then shortly after childbirth so that you can, you know, gauge that. And then there's subsequent books, what to expect with your infant and toddler and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's like that crap of a TV show that they made, Shit My Dad Says, that William Shatner did.
Yeah.
Oh, horrible.
Yeah, that was weird. I watched it just because William Shatner was in it. And it was nice to see Sasso doing something, too. That was cool. Anyway, next to last is Neil Berger. He is the director of Limitless, which is, I think, just came out on DVD and Blu-ray. But he talks about that as well as Uncharted Drake's Fortune. And for you gamers out there, that is the runaway PS3 hit that is all... It's basically kind of like Tomb Raider meets Indiana Jones, so to speak. It's probably just the, in a nutshell, easiest way I can describe it. And it's a very good video game. It spawned one sequel for sure, and I think another one's on the way. So it could develop into a good franchise if it is handled correctly. Unfortunately, as we've seen many, many times, most video games do not survive the transition to film. Fingers crossed that Neil Berger knows what he's talking about, so we'll have that link so that you can check that out as well. Last but not least for me, Django Unchained picks up a new bad guy. Not the main bad guy, that's still being played by Leonardo DiCaprio. But Kevin Costner is currently in talks to join up and be the evil Ace Woody, the man who is responsible for training the male slaves to fight for the amusement of the white customers of Candyland. So, interesting. We'll see. It would be interesting. I think it would just be interesting to see Kevin Costner try and play
a bad
this.
Guy? Yeah.
Well, not just play something that requires him to not be monotone. So, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
I love Kevin Costner. It's going to be great. Hopefully it's going
to
be
I great. Sincerely like Kevin Costner. I am willing to admit that some of his movies are just not good. However, I just like him. And I still watch his movies. I know that everybody dogs on The Postman. I liked it. It's not the best movie in the world. It is a little long, but I did like it. You know, people dog on Waterworld. That one really wasn't too good.
I'm not going to lie. I mean, I guess it's because I was a kid when it came out. But I thoroughly enjoy Waterworld, I guess.
Well, my first, and I think it's really, I am of the Dances with Wolves generation, which, to my knowledge, of course, I have since gone back and seen older movies and other movies or whatever, but to my knowledge, that is really the first time that I can ever remember seeing a Kevin Costner film, and I watched it in the theater. My dad, he took me, I was, I want to say 13, I think, 12 or 13, and we went and saw this movie together, and it was just an amazing movie, and, you know, brings back good memories with my dad, and... I don't know. So I've always, ever since then, always been a Kevin Costner fan. So I'm always interested in what he does. And that's the movie news. Leading us into now, 3 Squared. Now we get to talk about what it was. For those of you who may have missed last week or can't remember, although that would be kind of weird. Three squared for this week was your favorite actress known for their sex scenes. And, oh boy, this was fun for me.
We did. I mean, I don't know about you, but there were many hours of intense investigation and searching to find the perfect actress for this.
It was really down to two for me, and I did have to go back and watch some clips and jump around for some movies and really do some very excruciatingly delightful there's an interesting choice of words research on this, and I was happy to do it. Be glad to do it again.
I would hate to be the trash man picking up your garbage. So what were your two choices? Out of curiosity, I mean, what was the choice you skipped on?
The choice I passed on was Angelina Jolie.
I'm guessing for what was that movie she did with Antonio Banderas that was just chock full of sex scenes?
Oh, Original Sin.
Original Sin. And then she was in that one where she played Ogea?
I think so, yeah. And then, of course, you know, you get to see some nice sex boob action in Pushing 10, which is just a fun movie, because that's got John Cusack, and I like him in it. But I passed on her for my original, when you had that first thing that popped into your head, and I had the first thing that popped into my head. It's true. You just got to go with your gut. Your first instinct is usually the right instinct. And so, for me, settled on Kim Basinger. This woman has an amazing body.
Wow.
And you get to see it. So... and it was nice that she eventually got to redeem herself in 1997 with LA Confidential to win the Oscar. I believe it was for Best Supporting Actress.
Yeah.
So I was glad that, you know, after her, you know, sordid, seemingly can't act and just a pretty face who's there to get naked, she was actually able to pull off an Oscar nod. So that was cool. I was glad to see that, a little bit of redemption. That doesn't mean that I still can't go back and enjoy her early career, which includes the following three movies, and these are my choices, and I just decided to go with chronological, because it was too hard to decide if I wanted to do it by number of sex scenes, quality of sex scenes, how much nudity, how long the nudity was. Yeah, you know, it was just, you know, there's too many choices. You have a plethora of choices. The smorgasbord was large. So I just went with chronological. Yes, so my first one was 9.5 weeks with Mickey Rourke, and back when he looked normal.
Actually had a face.
Yes, this was definitely pre-boxing career Mickey Rourke. So next one was Final Analysis with Richard Gere, and it's always good to have Psycho, because, I mean, crazy's always good in bed. Final Analysis definitely proves that theory. Last but not least, The Getaway, which starred her with her then-husband, I believe they were married by this time, Alec Baldwin, back when he was young and thin and good-looking, because now he's also old and fat. So, there you go. But he's funny as hell. Love him on 30 Rock. And there you go. Those are my three choices. They have plenty of sex scenes in them. Not too terrible acting. And copious amounts of nudity.
Yeah.
And you will get to see just about every inch of Kim Basinger. The lovely Kim Basinger that you have wanted to see. And if you've seen it once, go back and see it again. That was my choice. How about you, sir?
Okay, well, my first instinct was actually... The Basic Instinct. You like that? You like the little play on title and, you know.
I did.
Exactly. It's delicious. But when we first started talking about woman and film and sex, mix all those together, and with me, Sharon Stone comes out. That's the one women, the one actress, especially as a kid growing up, when you're, you know, actually with most boys. I mean, were you the same way with Kim Basinger? You made a comment earlier.
Yeah, I really do. I think that shows that, I mean, you're 23.
Correct.
I am 34. Interestingly, the movie that you picked came out in, like, 91.
Yeah, 91, 92.
Yeah, and that's where you're going from there, and my movies are from 86 on. So, it's just, you know, I started watching movies earlier than you, and Kim Basinger was my hottie, and you started watching movies about the same, you know, those kinds of movies, about the same age that I was when I got in, and for you, your hottie coming through the ages was Sharon Stone.
Yes, and she, I mean, okay, so, her and Michael Douglas both, and if we ever choose, like, oh, what, you know, guy was in the best side, well, I guess it would have to be for the, another variation of our show. But, you know, but Michael Douglas indeed has actually two other movies where he, you know, it has crazy sex with women. One of them being with Glenn Close, and the other with...
I can't dig that one anymore because she looks too much like George Washington now. Seriously, look at a picture of Glenn Close and then look at a dollar bill and tell me they don't look similar. And it freaks me out because I can't watch Fatal Attraction anymore because that's what I think of. I don't look at her like she looked then. I look at her and think about how she looks now and then go, oh my God, it's George Washington having sex with Michael Douglas.
So you wouldn't want to, you know, venture in her Chesapeake Bay area ever?
No, I would not go down her Potomac.
Well, I'm talking about, you know, 1980s Glenn Close.
Because, see, now I'm thinking about it doesn't matter. I'm looking at that, thinking about now. So you picked Basic Instinct.
But
first.
I picked Basic Instinct. Yeah, because, I mean, you have to admit, I mean, though pretty much every sex scene in the film is basically a rape scene, which, I mean, it's the fucking truth. I mean, Michael Douglas
gets... What the hell is it with you and rape and serial killers anyway?
I don't know, but Michael Douglas gets you know, basically raped throughout the movie, which is, I mean, okay, so I'm banking on the fact that most of the people that listen to the show have seen Basic Instinct or know of it, what the movie is about. And, you know, it kind of goes along with it a little bit. But yes, the sex scenes are very sexy, and basically the movie is comprised of sex scenes that are of many guys, you know, what we dream of, and, or what we want, or what we have always desired of a hot blonde chick tying us to the bed frame and having their way with us. At least in my mind, if I'm crazy, then I'm crazy. The next movie is with, is called The Specialist. And I wasn't thinking of this movie initially as one of her best sex scenes, but Matt actually brought this to mind because the sex scene in the shower is actually voted one of the worst sex scenes ever made. But when you're a young coming-of-age boy, I guess it's something that is somewhat sexy and interesting. Even now you watch it and you're kind of like, man, I wish I had a shower that could, you know, that could fit two people lying
that could accommodate that, yeah.
Exactly. So you're basically dreaming of the appliances as well as the hot sex that Sylvester Stallone is having with, you know, the total fox Sharon Stone. Now,
I just wanted to throw one thing in there. I remember, this just came into my head, I do remember seeing, like, an Entertainment Tonight or something that they were talking about, like, during the filming of it, and, Sylvester Stallone does comment on the fact that he is not the least bit upset that he gets to be paid to kind of have these scenes with Sharon Stone. Which I thought was pretty funny that they put that on, you know, like Entertainment Tonight or whatever, but that's what they did.
Yeah, I would be honored to. I'd be like, sign where. I will do that.
No problem.
Okay, so the third movie for me was a little bit difficult because I just had to choose something that was indeed composed of, you know, sexy stuff as well as, I guess, nudity and whatnot for the sake of Three Squared. So the final Sharon Stone movie is probably one of her worst films next to Catwoman that she did with Halle Berry. It's the sequel to Basic Instinct, Basic Instinct 2, where there, again, is crazy sex and hell, man. She still looks hot as always. So, yep. But yes, those are my three hot and sexy Sharon Stone films for this week's Three Squared.
Very cool. So, excellent Three Squared. Kim Basinger and Sharon Stone. We like it. Very much so. Next week's Three Squared is going to be your favorite actor that has done voice acting, and you have to pick three of their voice acting movies. So, I'll do a really easy one. Let's say that your favorite actor who's done voice acting was Tom Hanks. You could then say your favorite Tom Hanks movies that he voice acted in would be Toy Stories 1, 2, and 3. That's the idea, that's what we're coming up with, and that's the Three Squared for next week. Your favorite actor that has done voice acting, and three films that they voice acted in that are your favorites. So, again, please, we hope that you guys can play along at home. Let us know what your favorite movies are or your favorite actor. Let us know what your favorite actress was that's known for their sex scenes. You know, we'll if we get some interesting stuff, we will definitely talk about it on the show. And I guess without further ado, it's time to talk some movies.
Ah, yes. The moment everybody probably has been waiting for.
Yes, definitely. Let's jump on in. We got. Shall we start with the one that we both went and saw, or should we save that for last?
I don't know. Screw it. Let's talk about Harry Potter.
All right, let's do it. Harry Potter 7, Part 2.
Harry Potter!
So, let's go ahead and talk about Harry Potter then. Harry Potter, Deathly Hallows, Part 2.
Yes.
I guess for me, because in case anybody who's listening to this, for whatever reason, the 8 people left in America who, I guess, have not seen the movie yet, I don't want to spoil it for them. I will simply sum up this movie. We can go into more detail, of course, if you'd like. But I will simply sum up this movie by saying, it was a very, very good movie, but it didn't blow me away, and I was kind of hoping that it would blow me away.
I can agree with that. I mean, the movie didn't blow me away, but what I will say, which is, I guess it's not very common for me, is that the opening scene, actually the first maybe 5 minutes of the movie, got me hooked to the film. I was just hooked and ready to go. How the filming, how they filmed it, the story progression, what happened, what was going on, what it was leading up to, had me completely. But you were right. It didn't completely blow me away, but it was indeed a good film, a fun film, an enjoyable film. And surely, I think people will enjoy it, especially if you've been following the film since Sorcerer's Stone, or the Philosopher's Stone,
if you're a UK person.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of the thing. I think that's why I wasn't blown away, because they stayed so true to the book with Part 1 that the departures they made in Part 2, and again, it does not take away from the movie being good, which was surprising. And I think that because they gave it the time to do 2 hours and 10 minutes for the second one, that it was still really good. There were certain aspects of the book that they could have brought to life in Part 2 that they didn't have to make the departures from, that really would have added to it and really would have blown it over the edge. And, you know, again, it's so hard to say, you know, to be too specific without giving things away for anybody who might not have seen it yet, because it's stuff that's in the book, so if you've read the books, you know. What the hell? Spoiler alert, I'll put it on the things. Again, spoiler alert. For instance, when, I can't remember which one of the twins it is that dies, in the book, you actually experience him die. They cut away from Harry to go back to the castle fighting and kind of showing you what's happening, and you see him actually die. I guess, well, you kind of see it in your head because you're reading it. And it's things like that. You see Tonks, you know, you get to see all that kind of stuff. These people who have done so much and made it so far, and you've grown to love and count on and know that they're going to be there, and you see them drop one by one by one. And it just tears you up when you're reading the book, and it's really good. And all they do is allude to it. They show you the culmination so that you can experience that loss, but you only get to experience it in the aftermath, at which point you're still just kind of waiting for the next point that Harry's going to take. And it's things like that that I think that if they had included in the movie instead of departing from the book, would have blown me away.
I agree. I totally agree. Yeah, whenever it showed the corpses and the, you know, the people that died, I was just, well, that sucks.
Yeah. You know, you feel bad, but you're waiting. But again, because of the pace that they set up at the beginning of the movie, you're waiting. You know, it's like story time's over. It's action time now. And like you said, you were really excited and set up by the pace for it. And I think they were trying too hard to keep that pace, and that's what led to the departures from the book where they were doing things different. So again, it was still a really good movie. It just, for me, didn't blow me away due to the departures of the book.
Yeah, fair enough.
How about you, sir? Nothing else to add?
I really don't. I mean, I think you kind of you nailed it pretty much. Just like I said before, I thoroughly enjoyed the movie, but yeah, it seemed like the pacing of it was really quick, and that's not bad. It's just the emotional involvement really wasn't that there. The emotional involvement really wasn't there for the supporting characters, like you said, have always been there since the very beginning.
Yeah, and I think they deserved a better send-off than what they got, definitely. All right, well, cool. That was shockingly quick. let's jump into... I guess I'll go ahead and go first, if that's okay.
Go for it.
I'm going to jump into Rubber. Rubber was terrible. Now, allow me to explain why. This movie could have been so much more than what it was. And this movie would have been amazing if they had done one thing different.
And what would that be?
Just put the first 6 minutes as the last 4 minutes. If they had just tightened up that first 6 minutes to about 4 minutes and put it at the end, that movie would have been amazing. But and the reason why is because Rubber is about basically a serial killer hell-bent on revenge tire that tries to fall in love with a girl. Serial killer revenge tire? How, Matt? It's got basically a telekinetic, psychokinetic thing where it vibrates and it causes people's heads to explode. That's how it kills people. Now, the whole movie, and they tell you this up front, so I'm not spoiling anything for anybody here, is it is a literal homage to why is this happening for no reason at all.
Shit happens.
Exactly. The problem is that because it's an homage to that, and at the same time making fun of it, and then at the same time of making fun of it has a dual plot that involves making fun of itself so that it can make fun of that all for no reason, destroys the whole illusion of what you're trying to do, because they explain it to you right at the beginning. This whole movie happens for no reason. Why am I watching it? I'm literally asking you the question.
Oh, you are?
Yes. If I know up front that there is absolutely no point to this and there is absolutely no reason for it, then there is absolutely no reason to watch it.
Well, no, that's not true. I mean, there is a point to it.
But what's the point?
Well, see, what the beginning was trying to... what was telling you is that... well, why was the tire killing people? Or how can the tire kill people? Well, I mean, just shit happens. It just happens, kind of like what you were saying. Well, you know that up front, and I understand what you're saying. Well, if that was at the end, I could see how that could work differently and how it could build up differently.
It would have absolutely made the movie amazing, because anybody who wants to try and figure out legitimately what's going on can. Anybody who wants to sit back and enjoy the ride can. Anybody who wants to be in the middle group there and try and do both can. And then to find out at the end, literally no reason. The people who were trying to figure it out and go, oh my God, of course, no reason. It makes perfect sense now. The people who were just sitting back and enjoying the ride go, that's hilarious. Oh, my God, this whole thing happened for no reason. And the people in the middle would have been probably, actually, those people probably would have been a little disappointed because they're like, oh, really, for no reason? I could have just sat back the whole time. But still, the movie then would have been amazing. And it would have made the spectator portion of the movie that much better. Because the basically, for those, obviously, who have not seen this movie, the movie is about the tire who is going on a killing spree. But at the same time, the movie is being narrated and kind of encapsulated so that you can, in case you get lost, they can kind of steer you in the right direction, is a group of people who literally watch the movie as it happens by standing in one spot and looking at it through binoculars. So that is what that is kind of how, and but then, even then, those spectators have their own plot that kind of rides along the movie.
And see, that's what I liked about it, is that I just loved the beginning monologue. I love the monologue that the cop gives at the beginning. Because I had no idea what to expect, especially the trailer. The trailer shows you about the Tyler, or the Tyler. I keep saying Tyler. You know, the trailer shows you about the tire, and, you know, it's killing people, but you don't know why. And so the whole monologue at the beginning of the movie shows the sheriff talking to these people, and the camera's just fixated on him the entire time. And he just basically says, why has this happened? Well, shit happens. No reason at all. I forget the exact words he say. So at that point, you know, like, okay, well, God, I know that this movie's about a killer tire, but I just don't... Oh, man, the movie's got to be stupid since it's about a killer tire. But at that point, when he says, well, shit happens, well, then it's like, well, okay... It happens.
But see, that's the whole thing, is that like, when the tire goes on its initial existential journey, and it just keeps falling over, and it keeps falling over, and then it tries to drink the water, and then it, you know, it rolls over the bottle, rolls over the glass bottle, and then all of a sudden it breaks it, whatever. It takes too long, and then the music is really weird, and the music, it does not aptly tie into what's going on, so that further throws you off. And after the first 6 minutes of nothing going on, so that they can explain rather smartly, again, because, you know, that it's about nothing, it's like, now it's just taking too long. Everything takes too long. It's literally just, well, then get to the end of it, and so it becomes literally like an hour too long.
I disagree. I think the whole lead-up of when you first meet the tire, and this is going to sound really ridiculous for people who have no idea what the hell we were talking about, but when the tire, you know, there's, if you remember, there's that long shot, and you see the tire, and suddenly the tire starts moving, but it takes time before the tire, finally gets up to start rolling around. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like somebody learning to walk for the first time. It tries, fails, tries again, fails again, tries one more time, but fails, but then tries another time, and it succeeds. And to me, I thought that was just building the audience's relationship with the tire, because the tire, believe it or not, actually has a personality. And it actually is, you know, it's a character. And I thought the personality that the film... developed for it, as well as the tension itself and the time and especially the pacing of the film, because without the pacing you wouldn't have the particular comedy that the film kind of produced, at least in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, but the pacing that the pacing that creates the comedy that the film produces doesn't happen until well after that.
I disagree. I think the
it's
comedy...
not funny to watch a tire fall over.
I think it is, because it, to me, when I'm watching it, I'm kind of looking at it for, you know, like replacing that with a human trying to do it, a person trying to walk. You know, because you watch videos of, like, baby animals walking for the first time, and they stand and they fall.
But see, you're now defeating by doing that, you're defeating the purpose of the film. Because because the purpose of the film is that everything in this movie happens for no reason.
Exactly,
you,
it does.
But you are searching, or not even searching, you are assigning reasonable actions to an unreasonable situation.
Whoa, hang on. That is kind of preposterous, because what they're saying
this movie is preposterous.
Your face is preposterous. So what they're saying that is to where, like, shit happens is that the attire...
He doesn't say, okay, see,
okay,
there
he
and
doesn't
again.
Say shit happens.
He does
okay,
not
he
say
doesn't,
shit happens. He
doesn't
says
say shit
no
ha- I'm
reason.
Saying shit happens.
Everything okay. is no reason. That's what he says at the beginning. Everything is no reason. This
exactly.
movie is an homage to no reason.
Exactly. Everything has no reason. Okay, so why is a tire living? Well, there's no reason why the tire has a life. There's no explanation of it except that there is no reason. That's what I love about it.
But
well,
then why are you saying that you associate the tire getting involved with developing a personality akin
it is.
To
I
watching...
Mean, it is
it's not.
It's
watching...
It is. It is. It's developing a character. It has not... That's... okay. What,
I would agree with you. I might agree with you... but for different reasons, or I might disagree with you and find something else cinematically valuable with what you're trying to say, except for the fact that there's no reason for it. There is no reason for it. And they tell you that there is no reason for it.
No, they don't... Wait, hang on. No, what they tell you there is no reason for is what is happening, as in that the tire is, you know, alive, or the tire...
It's everything, yes. From the way the car drives up, and not there's chairs standing out there for no reason. The chairs fall apart and break apart because he hits every single one. The dude climbs out of the trunk with a glass of water, goes through his whole spiel, and the whole thing is for no reason, and then he dumps the water out, and he gets back into the trunk and drives away.
Exactly. It doesn't have any reason, but still there is the development of characters. Even the cop there's character development. With characters, there is a development of character. The entire movie, there's a setup, there's tension, there is a reason for all of that. I mean, to me, it makes sense. I mean, because there has to be there is a character.
It makes sense because everything's happening for no reason, so that you have a context with which to put it in. So you're not trying to figure it out. You're not hurting your brain trying to figure out this movie. I think that no matter what you wanted to take away from it, to find out at the end that it all happened for no reason would have been the best thing in the world. But going into it, knowing that there's no reason for anything for what you're watching, is just kind of like, okay, so what happens now?
Okay, spoiler alert. So the movie ends with tires taking over, I guess, the world and whatnot.
Well, at least heading into Hollywood. Anyway.
Yeah, at least heading into Hollywood. But, you know, but I think, to me, that was, if I remember correctly, wasn't that the ending shot? With them heading down,
to the Hollywood sign. But then the credits roll, and they do the spiel from the side. They do the no reason spiel from the side with the accountant standing there.
Yeah,
and that was perfect. I wish they'd have done it that way. They could have shown them. They could have shown him driving up. Okay, and then when he gets out. Flip the camera to the side so he could do the monologue straight into the original camera, and you can just totally see it from the side with the accountant, because the look on the accountant's face was the look on my face by the end of the movie. And anybody who would have been desperately trying to understand or try to assign reason or try to figure it out, to see that would have been perfect. It would have been priceless, and that was what would have made the movie. But for me, going into it with the knowledge that there was no reason for anything I was about to see, it ruined it for me. And that is where it stands.
For Matt.
Yes.
All right. Well, comment on it, please, people. Please.
Yes, yes. We're going to definitely need some audience feedback on this one.
Yeah, we really do. We do.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on to another movie. What do we want to talk about? What's the next movie?
It's just your movie. It's Pucker Up.
Pucker Up? Okay, well, I got to talk about Tree of Life afterwards, if that's okay. Okay, so sure. The movie that Matt recommended to me was Pucker Up. which was a documentary on whistling, actually. It chronicles six competitors, and I believe it was a it was an annual whistling competition from, like, 2004, I guess. I don't know. The movie came out in 2005, so I'm guessing the competition was 2003, 2004. And how Matt kind of proposed this film to me to watch. He said he thought I would enjoy it because not only is it about whistling, but it also encounter some really quirky characters in those that entail and these whistling competitions. And I would have to agree, there are some very interesting characters. There are some very good whistlers and people that I would love to whistle. I would indeed. And it's, I guess, if you are a inspiring or aspiring whistler, this would be the film for you. But now, it's not a tremendous documentary whatsoever. It's not amazing. It's not heart-wrenching. It's not, oh my God, I gotta run for government because this film changed my life. But it's actually a documentary where you can watch, where you don't feel like, you know, slitting your wrists at the very end, which is actually a nice change for me, for that genre of documentary. It's actually fun. It's funny. You listen to gorgeous whistling and you get to encounter some goofy characters. And so I recommend it. I mean, I gave it the full, I guess it's like, what, 5-6 stars on Netflix?
Yeah, I think it's it's 5 stars on Netflix.
Yeah, I gave it the full. I mean, it was just an enjoyable hour and 15 minutes. So I recommend it just for a movie to kick back and check out.
Cool. Well, I'm glad that you did enjoy that. Now, I had wanted to see this movie. I just, my schedule did not permit for me to get to see this movie, and I don't know that I can. I don't even know if it's in the theater at the Silverado anymore. I'm sure it's around if I wanted to look for it. But tell me, Tree of Life, what'd you think?
Tree of Life is a beautiful film. I wish that's all I can say about it. But unfortunately, people go to this movie. There are those that go to this movie, and they leave 10 minutes into it because they say it's boring. They say it's stupid, or they just don't like it. The film is directed by Terrence Malick, the guy who made The Thin Red Line, New World. Very talented filmmaker. He's kind of a reclusive filmmaker as well. You don't hear a lot about him only when his movies come out. They're that good. But this film is just so bizarre and so out there. The majority of it is filmed in Texas. The Houston is a big. I mean, there's like 10 minutes of the film are just buildings of downtown Houston captured in such a glorious way. The film basically just takes a look at relationships. Specifically, of course, the film stars Brad Pitt. He plays a father in the 1950s, 60s. And the film kind of hones in on the relationship between the father and the wife, and especially the father and his two sons. And the way how he's strict with the sons and how he's trying to teach his sons life lessons, but at the same time coming across as a very mean, kind of almost brutal father. But at the same time, you know he loves his sons, and he's doing it out of love, just trying to teach them respect and whatnot. But it's just his methods of doing it. You know, it's just kind of iffy. In fact, the performance of Brad Pitt reminded me of my father so much, and the message that the film conveyed, that at the end of the film, I called my father at 1 o'clock in the morning when I got out, and I left him a voice message just to tell him I loved him. I mean, that's how much the movie kind of made an impact on me. I mean, though the film is made in the 50s, is based in the 50s, I mean, a while back ago, when I grew up in the 80s and 90s, there's just so much of it that just kind of transfers over, just this type of stuff I did as a kid. And the type of relationship I had with my mother when my father wasn't around. Just stuff like that. It's just amazing. And just an example of different stuff, things that people didn't really like. There's an actual scene where you see the birth of Earth. You see the destruction of Earth. You do see dinosaurs. You see just different planets and formations. You see random shots of downtown Houston and downtown Dallas in beautiful glory. Just Terrence Malick, it just encapsulates and on film creates beautiful images that you have seen somewhere, you know, at some point in your life, that just evokes some sort of imagery of a happier time of your life. And that's just the essence of the film, is just happiness and appreciation and, of course, love. And that's how I look at the film, is just a big bundle of love this entire film is. And whoever watches this movie, I hope they appreciate it. And if you don't like the movie, or if you don't dig it, or if you don't understand the movie, then I'm sorry. I mean, I guess you just don't hold the mental capacity that you should. Nice. I mean, I hope you movie people out there really enjoy it and appreciate it especially. And it's definitely a movie you have to see in the movie theater, I think.
Well, I will, based on that, I will try and see that in the movie theater if it's at all possible. So, outstanding. Well, let's see here. I guess we will jump right into our classic movie recommendation. This one is definitely quirky. It is pure 80s comedic nonsense. It's everything that was good and bad about the 80s at the same time. And this movie is called Revenge of the Nerds. That's right. And I think you will find that this movie is definitely for the younger crowd, and perhaps maybe those who are of the more aged persuasion, who might be in a slightly nostalgic mood. I would definitely say that this could bring about that for you. And I don't know. It's got an interesting way to get its message across about acceptance, but at the same time, it is definitely an irreverent comedy. And, yes. So coming to you from 1984, 27 years ago, so just barely into the classic world, we have Revenge of the Nerds. So it spawned several terrible sequels, and I don't recommend watching any of those. Just Revenge of the Nerds.
And I'm sure they're going to be making a reboot of that film pretty soon.
I don't know. There's no way they could pull that movie. It'd have to be R.
Yeah, I mean, the original movie was rated R.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nudity all over the place. So
the reboot would be rated R. They'd be able to pull it off.
I don't know. They don't do very many R movies anymore, especially mindless comedy R-rated movies, because they want to do PG-13 so they can get the most people into the theater. At any rate, that's the classic movie recommendation. Moving on into the last segment that we have will be Twilight Zone.
I can't whistle right now.
I was going to say.
I mean, especially
if talking about Pucker Up, you should, you know.
I mean, that's the thing about Pucker Up, is that I cannot whistle. I mean, I can pretend to whistle, but, you know, it's like, damn you people, sounding like a Disney film.
I know, it's ridiculous. Well, as you know from last week, I was, you know, an idiot, and I forgot to watch Walking Distance. So, I will briefly jump in with Walking Distance. Again, this was a businessman, ad man, Martin Sloan, visits his sleepy hometown. He's, you know, trying to relive some of his childhood past, and basically, through the courtesy of the Twilight Zone, actually ends up in his hometown 25 years previous. So he gets to look at him he gets to see himself as a child, reliving his own childhood memories. And interesting little cameo appearance by like a 4 or 5 year old Ron Howard, which I thought was pretty spiffy.
I did not realize that.
Yeah, the little kid that he talks to, and the kid's like, yeah, "You're not Martin. You're not Marty Sloan. I know Marty Sloan, and you're not him." That was Ron Howard.
Really? I had no idea.
So I thought that was
cool.
Thought that was fun, and I loved the moral of the story, which is don't relive your past. Appreciate your past, but don't relive your past. Use the lessons of the past to carry you through your future. And it was an interesting way to do that, especially with an accident that takes place towards the end there. For those who didn't watch it yet, you should watch that one. Then there was the episode, now that we're all caught up and everybody's on, we're on Escape Clause, which is about a hypochondriac who basically sells his soul to the devil for immortality.
Yes. Yes.
With the escape clause itself being that if for any reason you should tire of your immortality, then you can die. I'll kill you. And I thought the episode was okay for me. The what made this whole thing worth watching was Thomas Gomez, who plays Mr. Cadwallader. And Mr. Cadwallader is the devil, basically. And he makes that move. He makes that episode worth watching.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to agree with that.
I think the second part of it is definitely sticking it through to watch the character of the hypochondriac, which is, the character's name is Walter Baedeker, played by David Wayne. And David Wayne does a good job with here, but I think just the character was overwritten.
Yeah, and especially with him jumping in front of the train.
Yeah, like, it was everything. You know, he goes from it, and I realized they were just trying to show the extremes of the character going from hypochondriac to can't get enough thrill.
Yeah,
but I think I think the best part was watching him get his just desserts. So I thought that was. So it was definitely worth watching to see him get his just desserts. But the episode in and of itself is worth watching solely for the way that Thomas Gomez plays Mr. Cadwallader. And I highly recommend watching, if nothing else, just skipping to about 4 or 5 minutes in and watching the initial soul selling scene. It's priceless.
Yeah, it was a good episode. I liked it. It was actually enjoyable. I thought there wasn't really anything bad about it except the extremes the guy goes through. But yeah, I agree with you.
For next week, it is Lonely. By gum, I think we're done.
Ah, wow. All right. So what did we? I already forgot. What did we choose for each other to watch?
Well, let's see here. I have chosen one of my better enjoyed Sean Connery films. I chose it for you, In the Name of the Rose. And that is you liked Black Death. I think you'll get a kick out of In the Name of the Rose.
All right, cool. Yeah, this has been sitting in my queue for a while now, so it should be pretty fun.
And you chose for me Harry Brown, which is another revenge flick, but not in the same vein as the previous revenge flicks that we were watching, so I'm looking forward to this one. I've been kind of, much as you with In the Name of the Rose, I've also been kind of eyeing this one, waiting to watch it, waiting for the right time, so I'm glad you recommended it, and I'll watch it. And then the official movie that we will be watching will be Secretariat. It's about a horse race, or a horse that races. I don't know. I saw it. It seemed kind of reminiscent of Seabiscuit, and I liked Seabiscuit, so I thought, hey, let's see. And Tim was like, okay, sure, why not? And that's what we're doing. So, there you go.
This emotional, inspiring, heartfelt movie.
And we're all just like, oh, okay, let's, yeah, sure.
All right, let's go for it, Secretariat.
That's right.
Lead the way.
Indeed, indeed. All right, well then, since we're at the end, let's do the spiel. The spiel being, of course, that you can always check us out at our website, slscast.com. You can send us an email over to us at theslscast@gmail.com. You can always follow us on Twitter with at theslscast. And the music you've been listening to, again, provided to us by Cries of Solace, and you can catch them at both myspace.com and facebook.com, both of them / Cries of Solace. And you can also catch us on iTunes and subscribe there. Please don't forget to rate us and leave comments either on iTunes and or the website. We would love to hear from you, and let us know what you think, whether or not you agree with us, disagree with us, agree with one of us, and vice versa, especially when we get into those things like about Rubber. We would love to hear about that if anybody sees that movie. We are done.
Yay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I guess that's it. So we will see you next week.
See you later.
Thanks again for listening to the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. Remember that you can find us at slscast.com, at the SLS Cast for Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can always subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.